Welcome to Animal Voices, the weekly show that informs listeners about the plight of animals and the dedicated people who work endlessly to improve lives of all animals. In the studio with me today are co-host Carl Loskin and technician and announcer Alan Jensen. My name is Marge Adams. Our first guest, who will be on the line shortly, is the president of the Vancouver Humane Society, Liberty Mulcahy. Liberty will be talking about the Vancouver Humane Society's education program. And in the second half, Carl Loskin has an interview. Will you tell us about that, Carl?
Yes, so we'll be interviewing Jeff Urton from the BCSPCA, and he is the Animal Welfare Coordinator, and we'll be talking about animal transportation.
Oh, thank you, Carl. That sounds interesting. And now I think we have Liberty on the line. Just be a moment.
Right, and over to you, Marge.
Yes. Hello, Liberty, are you there?
Yes.
Hello?
Hi, Marge.
Oh, hi, Liberty. Nice to have you on the line. I just want to tell the people in the listening audience a little bit about you.
Okay.
You have been the president of the Vancouver Humane Society for several months now. And you have just completed your master's degree. I'm really proud of you for that, Liberty.
Okay.
And it's from the Institute of Humane Education at Cambridge College, and that's in the U.S. And which state did you tell me?
It's in Massachusetts.
It is. Yeah, that is just super. And how appropriate you're going to be talking about humane education on the line. Now, Liberty, I know that you have worked on the humane education program at VHS for some time, a couple of years, I believe.
That's right.
And I would like to know where it was when you started, because I know we've always had some emphasis on education in the society. Can you tell us what a couple of years ago, how things are going?
Yes, that's right, Marge. Well, education, of course, has always been a very important aspect of the work at the Vancouver Humane Society. And when the program was developed, we realized that there were no programs for high school students that specifically addressed humane education topics. So we saw that there was a real need for a program like this, and that's why we developed the Power of One program. And at the very beginning, our focus with the program was mainly to go into classrooms and give presentations to different high school students. So we'd have a facilitator come in from the Vancouver Humane Society and give live presentations. But we have shifted our focus recently in this past year, and now we're focusing more on online presentations. What we realized is there was just such an overwhelming response to these classroom presentations that we were getting more bookings than we could handle. And with an organization our size, we had to sort of step back and reevaluate how we could be most effective with this program. And we realized that we could reach a much broader audience by offering these presentations for teachers to use as resources and to download online or order on CD-ROM and act as the facilitator themselves.
How long have you been using this approach?
Well, we actually just developed 4 presentations in the past couple months, and so it's very new. They're available now on the Power of One website, which for your listeners, if you're interested, is www.powerofonehumaneeducation.org.
And is one spelled out or just a number?
Yes, one is spelled out. It's quite a long address, but it can also, the website can also be accessed through the Vancouver Humane Society website. And so it's quite a new approach, these online presentations, but we expect that they're going to be very successful.
Yes. And you hardly can rate the reaction from the teachers so far, but I'm sure they're going to be really enthusiastic because that's a big help to them.
Yes, we hope so. And so far, the initial reaction has been very positive. The teachers were extremely supportive of the classroom presentations, and the teachers that we've spoken to so far about the online presentations are excited to begin using them in their classrooms.
Yeah, how would you define the goals of the program? Right. I know it's humane education, which is pretty descriptive, but just tell us what actually you hope to achieve.
Okay. Well, maybe I can start by explaining humane education, because I'm not sure everyone listening really understands the definition of humane education. Mm-hmm. So what humane education is it addresses a number of different social justice topics, including human rights, animal protection, environmental protection, and cultural and media issues. So what it does is, instead of looking at these different issues in isolation, it looks at how they're all interconnected and how they really do relate to each other on so many levels.
Uh-huh.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring these very important social justice topics to the attention of the high school population in the greater Vancouver area and hopefully beyond. And what we would like to do, what we'd like to see, is to see students start thinking critically about these issues and not just sort of taking an issue, looking at it, and seeing, you know, all of the things that are going on and potentially getting depressed. But what we try to do with humane education is we try to provide positive choices. So we present material, social justice material, and then we show students what they can personally do in their own lives to make a positive difference.
I guess this is the empowering part, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
So we try to empower students to realize that even though there are a lot of problems in our world these days, that they can personally do little things in their lives to make a great impact and make a really positive change.
Now, can these programs be integrated into the subjects that are already laid down for the teachers to be presenting to the students?
Yes, absolutely. What we did when we created the presentations is we paid attention to the BC curriculum, and we looked at some of the learning outcomes, and we tried to create the presentations with that in mind so that they could easily be taken into various subjects, anything from English, social studies, any sort of environmental topic, mm-hmm. science. It really can fit in so many ways as long as the teacher is creative in their use with these presentations. Mm-hmm. So it certainly does fit into the regular curriculum.
Now, you do have a help to the teachers who don't have any background in this subject, don't you, that
yes.
goes along with the programs?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely right. So currently we have these four interactive presentations that are available online. And with each presentation, there also comes a teacher's guide. So what we've done is we've created teacher's guides so somebody could take this presentation, read the guide. It would take them step by step through how to give the presentation in their classroom and all of the background information for questions that students might ask during the presentation. So someone could literally have absolutely no experience with a human rights issue or an animal protection issue and take this presentation and be a very good facilitator after reading our teacher's guide.
Now, would they be appropriate from junior high, say grade 7, what I think of as junior high? I don't know how it works just today, but grade 7 to 12?
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh. We did design them with high school students in mind, but they could certainly be applicable for junior high as well.
Mm-hmm. And give us an example, will you, of one of the programs, one of the presentations?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you the title of all four. Mm-hmm. One of them, the first one is called Exploring Oppression, and that takes a look at different types of oppression in our society. Not only human oppression, but also animal oppression, and sort of takes a look at how our daily choices can sometimes contribute to oppressive situations. And there's another one called True Cost, and what that takes a look at is, instead of thinking of an actual cost or a price tag on something that if you walk into a store and buy a product, the price you'd pay at the cash register, it looks at hidden costs for the products we buy. So, for example,
that's very good.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. There's a lot of hidden costs that we don't think about on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we might buy an everyday product that we just think is completely benign, but when you actually look into everything that goes into making that product, you realize that There are environmental, there could be environmental degradation that takes place for that product to get to us here on our supermarket shelves, or there could be, with clothing, for example, it could have been made in a sweatshop by a child, and we wouldn't necessarily think of that when we buy the product. Or there could be wildlife issues, deforestation with certain paper products, and animals are affected, the environment is affected, and, of course, environmental issues affect people as well. So we try to sort of delve a little deeper and look at things below the surface and look at everything that goes into making a product and how by choosing different products that are more environmentally friendly or have better practices in the way they were made, we can really make a difference for...
Yeah, I think a good example of that is the Chicken Out campaign that has been so successful, where the tremendous exploitation of hens was brought to public attention, and certainly they responded. And I think getting it into the schools is going to get it into the homes, isn't it?
Yes.
And there'll be the teenagers spend a lot of money, of course, but the adults in their home as well would be enlightened that perhaps they wouldn't when they wouldn't be otherwise.
Yes, that's very true. And of course, the high school students, they're the next generation of adults, and mm-hmm. they're going to be the ones making decisions and deciding where to spend their money and deciding how they're going to live their lives. So it's important for them to have the tools they need to think critically and make choices that are going to be beneficial.
Absolutely. Now, if a teacher is interested in getting these materials, maybe some of them are planning ahead right now for the fall, and would like to view materials. Can you tell us how that would be possible?
Yes, absolutely. So the presentations, the four presentations that we've created are available on the website, which again is www.powerofonehumaneeducation.org. Mm-hmm. And teachers can go to this website, or anyone really can go to this website and preview the presentation. And if they like what they see, they can download a copy directly. Or if they prefer to order a copy, we have made CD-ROMs, which are available for free to teachers. And those can be ordered through the Vancouver Humane Society, either by phoning the Humane Society, and the number for that is 604-266-9744, or via email. They can be ordered as well at info@vancouverhumanesociety.bc.ca. And another thing to point out is the website has a lot of interesting information for teachers, not just the presentations, but we also post relevant articles and news items and information about upcoming events that might be interesting to teachers. In fact, Vancouver Humane Society is going to be sponsoring one such event, which is called the Sowing Seeds Workshop. And I don't know if you've heard about that before, Marge, but...
Yes, I have heard it and had great feedback about it, too.
Yep. So this is going to be the third year that we're hosting this workshop. And what it is it's a humane education training workshop that's specifically geared towards teachers, and it's facilitated by the Institute for Humane Education. And so this year, we're actually going to be hosting this workshop on a professional development day, which is October 24th. So it's a really great opportunity for teachers that want to learn more about humane education and might want to bring these topics to their classroom to get the training, get some practice and get some training in these subjects.
That's wonderful. You're very wise in putting it on the professional day, October the 24th.
Yeah, we hope that it will help because we know how busy teachers are. They don't necessarily want to take their weekends to do a training workshop, so we figured the professional development day would be helpful in that aspect.
Sure, yeah. And the CD-ROM, that sounds really great, too. And there are all four programs are on that, aren't they?
That's right. You don't have to, if you order the CD-ROM, it does come with all four presentations.
And absolutely free.
Yes, free to teachers.
Free to teachers, that is.
Yep.
That's great.
Yep.
Sounds like a wonderful program.
Oh, thank you.
Now, are there any other points that you'd like to make regarding the education program?
Well, I guess I'd just like to say that although we have four presentations now, we're hoping to develop more in the future. So it will continue to expand, and we'll be really interested to hear if these presentations are working well for teachers. So we're going to listen to the feedback and see you know, if we can tweak it in any way to make it more useful. And we've also had a little bit of interest from a couple teachers in seeing these presentations in French. So that might be another thing we're going to look at in the future, is having them translated so they can be used in French immersion classes as well.
Wonderful. That's a great idea. Yeah, so that, thank you so much, Liberty, and congratulations on your master's degree.
Oh,
I think that's absolutely wonderful. How appropriate that you have that degree and are president of the Vancouver Humane Society. Thrilled with the whole idea. So thank you, and thank you for being on Animal Voices, and I'm going to invite you back again because you have an exciting topic that you covered in your thesis.
Yes, I'd love to come back and talk about that.
We want to hear about that. Okay, thanks, Liberty.
Okay, bye, Marge.
Bye. Now, you have been listening to an interview with Liberty Mulcahy, and Liberty is the president of the Vancouver Humane Society and one of the very active members on the Education Committee. Now, could we have a little break, Alan, please?
In the Woods, a little music from John Reichman and the Jaybirds, and they are at the Folk Festival this weekend. Tomorrow, in fact, I'm sure I'm going to check out some of that. Tomorrow afternoon out at Jericho Park at the Folk Festival, John Reichman and the Jaybirds are doing a whole hour of session, and I'm sure going to catch some of that as well as all the other stuff. So that's tomorrow and tonight and Sunday at Jericho Park. If you're anywhere near Vancouver, you probably want to check out the Folk Festival. Anyway, Marge has something to say.
Yes. Thanks, Alan. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, and this is the Animal Voices radio show. Now, Carl.
Yes, Sam. You know, this coming Sunday, that's the 20th at 11:30 p.m., we're having our 2008 Discovery Waterfront Walk, and it's starting at Kate's Park in the North Vancouver Deep Cove area, and it's a walk from Kate's Park to Panorama Park, and it's not a race or anything, so anybody can come along to Kate's Park at 11:30 to 1:30 and discover the waterfront. And I'm a board member of Save Our Shores, and the objective of the waterfront is to educate people about the need for responsible stewardship of our shoreline. So I'll be there. If anybody would like to meet the co-host on Animal Voices, I'd love to see you. Tap me on the shoulder. Well, you know, Marge, you've been speaking with the Vancouver Humane Society president and the education program. And so I have from the magazine, which is from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. That's an organization based in Washington, D.C., and they have some 5,000 medical practitioners who are involved with this group. They sent out a magazine here, which I thought was really interesting because it also is an educational organization. And they say here, processed meats cause cancer. So why do schools feed them to children? And in the late 2007, the verdict came in. The American Institute for Cancer Research and the World Cancer Research Fund released the most comprehensive review ever compiled on nutrition and cancer risk. Many foods are linked to cancer, the report confirmed, but it reserved some of its strongest language for the link between processed meats like hot dogs and bacon and colorectal cancer. The evidence was deemed convincing, and no amount was considered safe. No amount of those products were considered safe. Processed meats should be avoided completely. The term processed meats means those that are typically prepared by being preserved by smoking, curing, or salting, or the addition of preservatives. This includes ham, bacon, pastrami, salami, as well as hot dogs, sausages that are treated with nitrates and that have been added. So the average American will consume some 1.5 billion pounds of hot dogs every year. And the cash value of that is some $22.49 billion. So hot dogs is a big time industry, and it says here in this very leading article with a hot dog, and it says processed meats cause cancer, so why do schools feed them to children? Well, there was a little historical here about hot dogs, and it's a credit to German immigrants in New York, and they were looking for a simple way to make hot sandwiches in a confined space, and the idea came along on Coney Island, and that's how the hot dog was started. But I do have a quote from the Otto von Bismarck. He was the German chancellor, and he said, "There are two things you don't want to see being made. That is sausages and legislation." Anyway,
Carl has just been talking about hot dogs, and I have something very much related to hot dogs, and that is leaving dogs in cars when it's a sunny day. Well, this is from the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Leaving an animal in a parked car can be deadly. On a warm day, the inside of a parked car heats up very quickly. In a matter of minutes, even with the windows slightly opened, the temperature inside the car can reach 160 degrees. A hot car interferes with the dog's normal cooling process, which is evaporation through panting. With only hot air to breathe, dogs and other animals can suffer irreparable brain damage and even die from heat stroke in just a few minutes. Even open windows or parking in the shade won't prevent an animal from getting overheated. And you should know, if you're a dog owner, you should certainly know what the signs are of heat exhaustion, which are heavy panting, glazed eyes, rapid pulse rate, dizziness, vomiting, and a deep red or purple tongue, and take immediate action if you see such a thing. Further on, it's really, really upsetting to see a dog locked in a car and you can't do anything about it because it's an offense to break a window. But in some places, the police have the opportunity to do that if they see an animal suffering from overheating. I don't think that's the case in our area, but I'm not sure about that. But it's something to certainly be aware of. Don't take your dog out. And if you want to experience what the dog suffers, put on your winter coat, shut up the window, sit in your car in the sun, and you'll see what he's...
And you know, Marge, one thing I've also noticed, that sometimes dogs refuse to walk on the hot pavements. They just sit down. Mm-hmm. And so their paws are very sensitive, and people should maybe, if it's a small dog, pick them up and carry them in your basket or don't make them walk on the hot blacktop or concrete. Mm-hmm. Well, we have our next guest in line, but we did have a wonderful session here on education, and I just want to refer briefly to this pediatric study from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org, and they said that fruits and vegetables provide an academic edge because children who eat a diet rich in fruits and vegetables perform better academically than their peers. And it was a gigantic study of children's lifestyle and school performance study with some 4,589 fifth grade students. So, you're listening to Animal Voices. Our webpage is animalvoices.org. Many of our programs are posted on our webpage. So if you'd like to listen to it again, and one person whom you'd certainly like to listen to again is our next guest. It's Jeff Urton. He is the Animal Welfare Coordinator for the BC SPCA. Welcome to Animal Voices, Jeff.
Thank you, Carl. It's great to be on the show.
Great. You know, it's absolutely staggering that over 600 million farm animals are transported from farms to auction and then to the slaughterhouse each year in North America, is it, or Canada?
That's actually just in Canada, Carl. Absolutely. And because of the sheer number of animals, I consider that to be one of the greatest animal welfare issues that we deal with in Canada right now.
So how are you dealing with that through the BCSPCA?
That's a great question. Your listeners should know that the federal government does have regulations in place which attempt to protect farm animals during transport. They're overseen by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, but these regulations were designed over 30 years ago and are entirely out of date. Most Canadians should be embarrassed by the fact that we've fallen behind other developing countries so drastically over the last 30 years in terms of what our laws say, our laws that are in place to protect those animals. So what we're doing at the BCSPCA, along with some other partner groups around the country, is petitioning the federal government to improve those regulations, to bring us more in line with other developed countries around the world, and to ensure that those animals are protected from suffering much more adequately than they are right now.
Now, it was my impression that much of the legislation regarding the transportation of animals was much longer, like from not two centuries ago. Maybe it was amended 30 years ago. Maybe what happened there? Maybe give us some info on that.
That's an excellent question. I'm not entirely sure which piece of legislation you're referring to, but it may be you may be referring to the Criminal Code, which was well over 100 years out of date until it was just very recently amended within the last few months. Your listeners may also know that the amendments that were made to the Criminal Code of Canada with regard to cruelty to animals were entirely inadequate. And may actually put us worse off in terms of prosecuting cases against people who abuse animals. And so that's a separate issue that we were, and most, if not all, humane societies in Canada were completely disappointed with. But these regulations that pertain specifically to the transportation of animals are under the Health of Animals Act, and are not actually criminal in nature.
Now we have some legislation that's at least 30 years old, but it's the statistics. I mean, you're saying 600 million animals are transported in Canada every year, but so many of them are also injured. And give us an idea of, I can't imagine what it's like being confined in a truck for up to 52 hours with no food or water. I mean, what happens to these poor animals?
Exactly. I think most Canadians would be totally shocked by what's legally permitted in Canada. It's legal in Canada to transport cattle and sheep for 52 hours continuously without food, water, or rest. I think it's appalling. And as a result, there are many animals that, now not necessarily all truckloads are going for that far, but and in fact, we don't really know right now how many truckloads really are going to the maximum transport duration. But there are a number of other conditions, the weather conditions during extreme hot and extreme cold in which those animals are being transported, the density of animals on the trucks, how much space they're provided with, the injuries that they may have while on the trucks, all of those things contribute to the suffering of those animals. And
so, Jeff, do you have any idea of how many animals are, found dead when they open up the truck doors and haul these animals out for auction or slaughter?
Mm-hmm. Well, in according to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency's own statistics, there are about 2.5 million animals every year that are found dead on arrival at slaughter plants. Now, the vast majority of those are chickens. Just because there are so many chickens, mostly meat chickens, or as the industry calls them, broilers, that are raised and transported and slaughtered in Canada each year, but there are considerable numbers of other species too. So you have 17,000 pigs and about 500 cattle every year that arrive dead at the slaughter plant, and so even though those are animals that are destined for food anyways, they're destined to be killed at the slaughter plant. I don't think any Canadian, regardless of whether or not they eat meat, would think it's acceptable for those animals to be dying in a truck on the way to the slaughter plant. It just seems totally inhumane.
Now, many of these animals are transported to the United States, so once, if they could have been transported for 52 hours with no food or water in Canada, when they get into the United States, they're under a different jurisdiction, they can have another 52 hours, is it?
Yeah, they are absolutely out of our jurisdiction once they leave the Canadian border. The Americans restrict the transport time to shorter than ours. I believe the Americans restrict theirs to something like 36 hours. So they're, but your point is totally valid. Once these animals leave the Canadian border, we have no control at all. And that's one of the other recommendations that we've made to the government, that if we know that an animal is leaving the Canadian border to be transported or slaughtered in a way that wouldn't meet our own standards in Canada, that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency or the Border Services agents should be able to put a stop export order on those animals to ensure that the Canadian laws and the principles that Canadians feel should be adhered to for how to care for those animals are maintained once they leave our borders.
Now, Jeff, before we go on to your BCSPCA's recommendations, the Europeans are just streaks ahead of Canada with the animal transportation. I mean, the Brits are just... how do we compare? I mean...
It's an excellent point. Europe in general is doing a fantastic job of developing and improving animal welfare laws, and generally the northern European countries like the Netherlands, Sweden, Switzerland, and the UK are the most progressive. So what they've been able to do is push through European laws which actually limit transport time to 28 hours for cattle, for example, which is essentially half of what they are in Canada. They also require that if a truck is going to travel for longer than 8 hours, there have to be provisions on the truck that allow the animals to lie down and that give those animals access to water and that have active ventilation systems on the trucks to keep the animals cool. It's something that, to my understanding, no trucks in Canada provide. So that's one of our recommendations, is to bring our standards up to the European standards to ensure that animals that are transported on long journeys are provided with adequate standards while they're on those trucks.
Now, you've made recommendations to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, who oversee this transportation of animals, but you have some other regulations here regarded the trucks, the truckers who are, a notorious bunch for stopping at truck stops and all kinds of stuff, and they're not exactly listening to Schubert's quintets. And what kind of training do they do? Maybe you can just go through some of your recommendations for animal transportation in Canada.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So depending on the trucker, depending on the company that he's working for, there's a pretty wide variety of people out there doing this work. So you have some people who are very well trained, understand the basic animal handling principles, and understand the driver skills that are needed to ensure that you are driving those trucks safely and you're not harming your occupants on board. And there are some certification programs available now for truckers to allow them to demonstrate that knowledge. Those are programs, certification programs that the farming industry itself has designed, which I think is a fantastic move, and I really commend them for that. What the government needs to do is step up and require it for all commercial
make it mandatory.
Absolutely.
Make trucker training mandatory.
Absolutely. So now you have a situation where with some commercial truckers, you might have somebody who's transporting a non-live commodity, boxes of something one day, and live animals the next. And so you may end up in a situation where you have somebody who has no real understanding of how to handle these animals and no necessary requirements for the training that's needed to do it humanely. So we think that that's something that's extremely important. And aside from what the actual regulations say about the duration of time of transport and the amount of space for the animals and the other provisions on the truck, the actual capabilities, knowledge, and care of the driver is an extremely important factor.
Now, Jeff, you mentioned some 2.5 million animals die in Canada while being transported, most of them being poultry. But everybody can see for themselves what's happening, because on the east side of Commercial Drive and Hastings, you can see these transportation trucks drive in to the area. And, you know, I've stopped my vehicle on the corner there. It's on the north side. Often the door is open. And you'll see how these animals, these chickens, are absolutely crowded in these little pens. And, you know, I estimate that when I look into that open doorway, I must see some 60 or 70,000 chickens there. And you know what? I could hear a pin drop. There is not a sound there. And what about this overcrowding? I mean, the statistics, the producers must be interested in what do they do with the 2.5 million animals that die? What about the overcrowding issue on transportation? We see it on pigs and chickens.
Definitely. Well, and that's an excellent point. You look at, you know, those trucks that are going to Commercial Drive are coming from the Fraser Valley, and so their voyage is actually quite short, which is one of the benefits of having a quite centralized poultry industry in BC. There are other disadvantages, which we don't really have the scope to get into right now, but it is a benefit that those animals are quite close to the processing plant, so they're not spending too long in the truck. But they are often quite crowded, and in fact, that is definitely a contributing factor to how many of those animals die during transport.
Now, I'll drive by there after Animal Voices today, and I'll see these trucks still going in, and I sometimes wonder whether there's any regulation that these animals are, the slaughterhouse closes on Saturday and Sundays, whether these animals are just left in the cages for Saturday and Sunday. I mean,
that's an excellent question. I mean, to my knowledge, it's to the benefit of the industry for them not to leave those animals for a long time. The longer they leave them, the more animals die and the more weight they lose and the poorer quality the meat is. So they do actually in the poultry industry do, to my understanding, quite a good job of scheduling those things so that those birds shouldn't be waiting for too long. But they're not perfect either. So it's definitely not to the benefit of their business to leave those animals sitting all weekend. But there's also no regulation right now that would necessarily or specifically prevent them from doing that, to my understanding. So if you look at the density of those animals, the regulations right now refer to overcrowding, but they don't define overcrowding. So it's illegal to overcrowd these animals, but there's no definition included. So that's another improvement that we're seeking, is to actually define what overcrowding is, to give the Canadian Food Inspection Agency the opportunity to actually enforce a specific regulation there, rather than having to make a judgment call about what's too overcrowded.
Right. Now, when I see these pictures of animals being transported, and they're using electrical prods on the pigs and the cattle, is the chance of that, the electrical prods being banned? I mean, what a first step.
Mm-hmm. I know, and that's, we would love to see them banned. In fact, we would favor wording in the regulations that said something to the effect of electric prods must only be used in emergency situations. And an example of that would be where a cow falls on a handler, and the only way to get the animal off of a person or off of another animal would be to use an electric prod. But those are the only really justified, this is really the only justified excuse to use an electric prod. There are many more humane and sensible and reasonable ways to handle these animals. Most of the industry groups now actually don't even recommend them. Most of the industry groups themselves encourage producers and truckers and animal handlers to use gentle handling methods, but it hasn't caught on yet, really, in terms of what people are actually doing day to day on the ground. And there are all kinds of other things that happen. We know they happen out there. We know that there are people hitting animals and kicking animals. We have examples of them from enforcement agents that see these things happen, and they definitely need to be more explicitly prohibited in the regulations.
Thank you, Jeff. You know, we're speaking with Jeff Urton, who is the Animal Welfare Coordinator for the BC SPCA. And Jeff, with this, the industry, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which has often been said to be the spokesperson for the industry, and that the ministers, I mean, it's such a gigantic influence. They have so much influence on the Hill in Ottawa, and what chances are you having here? Because the industry is so wealthy and has so much at stake here. Mm-hmm. And what chance do you see of any changes happening in this absolute transportation? I would call it beyond cruelty. It's this long distance transport of 52 hours, no food and water. What chances do you see of them capitulating?
That's an excellent question, and I think, like anyone in the animal welfare movement, we have to stay really optimistic, even though sometimes the odds seem really stacked against us. In this case, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency ultimately reports to the Federal Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food, and in any consultation that organization, that agency takes, or that the minister takes, they're considering the input from a number of different stakeholders. So we're one of those stakeholders, but the farming industry is another one of those stakeholders, and that stakeholder bears a huge amount of weight with decisions that are made by the agency and the minister. So if the livestock industry doesn't want these kinds of changes to occur because it will increase their costs or make their business more difficult to perform in the short term, then the Food Inspection Agency and the minister are under a lot of pressure to avoid making those kinds of changes. And that's why it's really important for Canadians to speak up.
Right.
And demonstrate that they want these changes made. And it's not just, you know, urban folks. You have many farmers who I know take a great deal of care in raising their animals on farm. and then have difficulty when they have to let go of those animals and put them in the hands of a trucker to go to a slaughter plant where they don't necessarily know exactly how those animals are going to be treated. So there are farmers that want these laws improved as well to protect the animals that they have cared for. But it's extremely important that people register this, their support for changes, for improvements to these regulations.
And go to your webpage, which is?
Absolutely. They can go to spca.bc.ca/farminfo, all one word.
Right.
And they can sign an online petition there. They can also download copies of paper petitions if they'd like to circulate them to friends. And we really hope that people will do this and send in their responses, and we can continue to urge the minister to bring forward these regulatory amendments and actually begin doing a lot more to protect these animals.
Right, Jeff. In closing now, I'd just like to comment on one other item that changed this past week, and there was a lead article in both the Vancouver Sun and the National Post, and it's read like this. It said, the companies are to do their own inspections under a new plan. And then the Vancouver Sun had a lead article here. It said, allowing food industry to police itself, a risky recipe, experts say. And this is, so the Canadian Food Inspection Agency is ending its fundings to do certain types of tests. I mean, what gives here?
Yeah,
I mean, this is, to my mind, outrageous.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an excellent point. And those two articles that you're referring to explicitly are in regard to food safety and food labeling inspection. They don't specifically refer to the
animal transport
regulations. But right. if the agency is offloading some of its regulatory responsibilities onto industry in other areas, to be honest, it's discouraging, and it we're in a situation where we need the enforcement agency to step up its regulatory enforcement for animal transport, and it looks like if they're scaling back in other areas that we might be out of luck. but to be honest, I mean, Canadians need to expect more, and whether your concern is food safety or whether your concern is animal welfare, those concerns need to be brought forward to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and the Minister of Agriculture. I'll give you an example. In the 2006-2000 fiscal year, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency in its western provinces, so that's BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, issued only 31 actions on their animal transport regulations. So in four provinces, they issued 2 warnings and 29 penalties. So this is for thousands of truckloads of animals that are traveling through these provinces over the course of the year, and only 31 actions were issued,
which speaks loudly about the food industry regulating itself.
Yes, and so the inspectors that are out there working for the CFIA are responsible for doing so many different things. They're doing BSE evaluations. They're monitoring other diseases. There's been an outbreak of tuberculosis in some livestock in BC this year. And there are so many things that those people are tasked with doing that monitoring the animal transport regulations tends to fall to the bottom of the agenda. And there are very, very few of those inspectors on the road. And that's just not adequate. I think Canadians expect more. We expect that these laws that are on the books that we've asked for will actually be enforced, and they're just not being right now.
Thank you, Jeff Urton from the BCSPCA, for being on Animal Voices and sharing your knowledge and compassion.
Thanks very much, Carl.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Ah, thanks for that, Carl. Very interesting. Now, I didn't have a chance to finish telling you about the animals, dogs in hot cars, and what can you do? Well, there are some things you can do, although you might find you're feeling a little hampered because of various laws. But PETA suggests this is what you do. If you see an animal, a dog in a parking lot that's suffering from being overly hot, first thing to do is try to find the animal's owner note the car's license plate number and try to have the owner paged inside the store or whatever the facility is that the parking lot is beside. Tell the owner that it's illegal to leave an animal in a hot car. In some places, police can break a car's window to rescue the animal if the owner cannot be found. If possible, move the animal into an air-conditioned place. You can't do that until you get access, of course. At minimum, move the animal into the shade. And then, if you are able, immerse the animal in cold water until his or her body temperature lowers. Allow the animal to lick ice cubes. Do not give unlimited amount of cold water. That could be very bad. And then get the animal to a veterinarian. But rather than all of this, if owners would not leave their animals in hot cars or cars that are going to heat up and become hot, they could, and Peter advises they should, leave the animal at home in a cool place. I know dogs love to go car riding, many of them at any rate, but kindness requires you to leave them in a cool place.
Okay. Yes, yeah. And there's so many events happening. This Liberation BC, this, I have a buzzing on my thing here.
Sorry.
Okay, here we go. Okay, that's our last caller signing off there. Right. At the Vancouver Folk Festival this weekend, a great event, and so many environmental organizations are going to be there, including Co-op Radio. Well, Alan, you've been involved with folk music for so long.
Tell us where it's being held. I don't think anybody's mentioned that.
It's at Jericho Park, in which most people in Vancouver would know where Jericho Park is, out towards UBC along the waterfront. And it's great. They have this big park, and it's very well done because there are 7 different stages scattered around Jericho Park. And then there's a big food area as well. And they're very particular about the type of food vendors they allow there. So it's very interesting, good food available, and very interesting, good music available too. Plus, there's a stage for kids. And then, like Carl was just mentioning, a lot of environmental and other nonprofit organizations are there. Co-op Radio will be there with a little sort of tent and table, and as well dozens of other organizations, environmental and other community organizations. So there's all kinds of things happening there. It goes from 10 in the morning till 10 at night. So it's 12 hours all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And there's a huge amount of music and other entertainment there. And I think it's for one day, it's $80 to get in, but you get, you know, a tremendous amount. I mean, if you consider nowadays just going to an ordinary concert is very expensive, and you just go for a couple of hours and you've seen the concert and that's it. Going to the folk festival is like it's an experience, right? It's a great way to spend a day. Anyway, Carl, do you have any more announcements?
Oh yes, I do. Well, some of the people we've had on the last few weeks are going to be there. Liberation BC is going to be there. Joanne Chang, you can meet these people personally who volunteer to be on the table. And they have a couple of issues which I think are really important right now. The Jordan World Circus is coming to BC. And, you know, some 19 municipalities in BC have already banned circuses with animals. But there are still many that still permit this cruel treatment of animals. And then also one of the issues is that they still have a campaign with Papa's Furs. They're not protesting anymore, but people continue to continue to sell and furs. And then, of course, also the foie gras outreach event is still happening. That's fatty livers with force-fed ducks. That's the product called foie gras. And if you go to Liberation BC, you'll see the many number of elitist restaurants that are serving this absolute extreme cruelty.
Yes, thanks for the announcement, Carl. Now I want to remind the listening audience that they have been listening to CFRO 102.7 FM, and this is the Animal Voices radio show. Thank you for listening, and please come back next week at Friday at 12 noon, and we would be back here again.